Hi, this is Katrina and Sass, and this is Zooming in the Lens podcast. It's adventures of spiritual dialogue with us from the streets of rock and roll into the shifts of perceptions. We hope Zooming in the Lens can bring us all together, sharing the stuff of life and practice, suffering and grace. And we're really grateful to all of you who might be listening to our rants with compassion and curiosity. For more information, visit us at functionalyogaonline.com. Hey, this is Katrina.
And this is Sass.
And welcome to Zooming in the Lens, the fifth episode, I think it is. Yes, Sass?
I think so. Holy moly.
Excellent. Well, I have a kind of funny story.
Yay!
Well, you know what? It's not really funny. It'll be funny to you and everybody else, but it wasn't really funny for me at the time. But it's an example of a time that I think if being asleep spiritually got you karma points, I would have 3 billion.
Rivaling my 4, I take it.
Right. So Sass knows that I have this kitty named Pigeon. Mm-hmm. So Pigeon's not the healthiest of birds. I mean, that's funny.
She's a cat.
She's a cat, but that's actually really
funny.
That's
even better.
Not the healthiest of birds.
Anyways, Pigeon's not the healthiest of cats.
She's not the healthiest, because I named her Pigeon.
Because she's being named her after a bird.
I know, she's pissed about it. And that's what she's getting even with me. Yeah, she's sickly. She's sickly, the poor Pidge. So I had to take her to the hospital. I mean, it's not like a hospital for a cat. Other people out there that have animals will understand. Like, the hospital's like our doctor. Mm-hmm. So I had to take her to the hospital because of one of the things going on with her. And so, I get there and they tell me possibly not such great news, but they didn't know at the time. It ended up turning out okay. But it was somewhere in the vicinity of we might have to chop her leg off.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so I was, I was upset, and I have her in her carry-on in the passenger seat, and I'm driving down the road, and I need to find a florist to a neighbor neighbor's husband had unfortunately passed away, and I was going to go get flowers and leave them on the stoop. So I'm driving to go do that. And I don't know about you, but when I try to follow the GPS, especially where I am in California, it's almost impossible on this one road because it's wall-to-wall shopping stores.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, there's a florist on every corner. But when you're following GPS, it tells you to make a left about 2 seconds before you're going to make the left. It's not enough time. So that happened 3 times and I missed it. Mm. And finally, the 4th time, I said, I am not missing this. I am not missing this. I got, Pigeon in the passenger seat and I don't know if you know this. I can't remember the last time you've been in my car, but I have this Be Love sticker right in the car on the dashboard.
Yeah.
So that people can see it as part of my practice, because I noticed that when I drove around with this sticker, it was almost like I was driving around with Maharaji or Jesus in my passenger seat. It made me rise to the occasion to try to be better at my road rage. And for the most part, it usually works, but the GPS says, okay, you're going to make a left. And I was determined not to let it get me this time. So I get in the left-hand lane, and it's not a street that you're going to turn on. It's right in the middle of 2 streets, and there's no left-hand lane. But I look behind me, and there's nobody behind me. So I figured it's okay. It wasn't illegal. So I put the blinker on, and the traffic going the other way was tons of traffic coming the other way. Yeah. Just piles and piles of cars. So I had to wait for there to be a break to make a left into this florist. There was no other way to get into this florist. If there was a back way, believe me, I would have taken it. So I put the blinker on, and I'm singing, and I'm talking to Pigeon, and blah, blah. And I look in my rearview mirror, and this guy is coming piling towards me out of nowhere, and he pulls right up behind me. There's tons of room, kind sir, in the right-hand lane.
To pass.
Like, he could have passed me, yeah. So he gets behind me, and he sits on his horn. He sits on his horn. And
no,
I still can't make a left. So, I mean, the thought went through my mind of I should just get in the right-hand lane and go and turn around and go to the floors. But at this point, I had already passed so many of them. So I stayed there. Well, the guy comes from behind. He decides to pass me in slow motion. And by this point, I was so asleep that the best visual I could give you right now is that I turned into Jack Nicholson from The Shining. Like, all work and no play makes Katrina a psycho. And he drives to the side of me, he slows down, and I proceeded to put a giant smile on my face and look over at him and go, with this giant smile, like he,
like you were a psycho.
Like I was.
Well, that's called, I mean, I can't imagine anyone else doing anything different. Well, I mean, luckily you had no access to firearms is all I have to say.
Thank God, because this guy proceeded to say every curse word in the world to me, and all I could do was look at him
and laugh.
Like I had some conniving plan.
Oh my God.
Inside. And I then decided that I was going to turn left when I was able to in slow motion while I kept gazing at him, smiling and laughing, playing out my part in The Shining.
Wow.
In slow motion. Like,
uh-huh.
It lasted all the way till I made a left.
That is insane.
I get into the parking lot. It's still happening. The guy's long gone by now. I'm still doing it. Okay. I get out of the car and I stand at the back of my car because my mind was telling me, oh yeah, this guy's going to turn around and he's going to come into the parking lot. I don't even know what I would have done, but every ounce of New York just showed up in me. And then all of a sudden I look at the florist and I'm like, Katrina, you're here to buy flowers for somebody whose husband passed away. And you have your cat in the car who's like doesn't feel well. Like, and I snapped, not through, here's the good part, not through being pissed off at myself, but then the psycho laughing turned into literal laughing at my predicament. And I snapped awake, and I was able to snap out of it. I don't know if I really have ever snapped out of that sort of fight or flight kind of moment when you're just so gone. You're so gone. And I stood at the edge of my car before I walked into the florist, and I had a conversation with myself. This is why you practice. This is it. Because those moments when you lose it, it's not like I should be pissed off at myself. I'm just digging myself in even deeper if I do. And believe me, we can all do that. But in that moment, it was just the human predicament. Thank God I didn't hurt anybody or hurt myself. But, you know, newsflash, this stuff happens. This should happen.
But that stuff is the practice. I mean,
that's exactly it.
That's exactly what it is. And it's always an opportunity to snap out of it faster. I mean, but there's nobody standing. There's no teacher standing there going, ooh, you didn't quite make the 5 second mark this time, Katrina or Sass or whoever you are. You didn't quite make it this time. You know, there's a time limit. Ugh, it's all part of the practice. I mean, these people are almost put there specifically to help you. There are teachers. Of all the irony, you know, it's the ones you can't stand that teach you the most. Sadly, absolutely. Sadly, sadly, you know,
absolutely.
Like just trying to live with that, live with these people that are just, you know, outside
I'm
of our
so grateful room. For it. Yeah. It was fantastic
and very, very
it was
funny.
Fantastic. And really scary that those yeah. parts live within all of
all
us.
Of us.
And you have to love those parts too. And, you know, the perception that I had in that moment.
Wow. You just made me think of something. It's funny that you're talking about precisely this right now, because it's exactly what I've been, it's been coming up in my life all week this week. I mean, precisely this type of thing. Where somebody else activates a part of you that you're not necessarily that particularly fond of. You know, but I found something that's been helping me so dramatically. It was something that somebody said, and they said, you know, this is not something for people that aren't into, you know, sort of the idea that everything's one, which is, you know, okay, wait a minute, woo, 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 woo. But anyways, point is this, if you do not have to love the activator. Although the activator is a part of yourself, because we're all connected, as we know. However, instead of going, I love you to the activator, which is something that you will never be able to do in a moment like that, you switch it and you say to yourself, I love you. I love myself. I love me. You see what I mean? And that right there radiates out of you energetically into that heart as well. To the activator's heart as well, not consciously, not something where they're going to drop everything they're doing and go, oh my God, you're so right. That's not going to happen. That's not, and they're probably going to continue the behavior that's driving you out of your mind. However, your reaction calms down dramatically when you start telling yourself that you love yourself in that type of situation. And it's not something you're going to remember as it happens. But as soon as you can start to remember, like if you just started saying, oh, Katrina, I love you. Look what you just did. Didn't you just do that great? Wasn't that hilarious? That was the most hilarious thing ever. Look at that. You know, it's like stuff like that. It really makes a dramatic difference to me. I can bounce back way faster from, you know, because there were times in my life where that kind of thing that you've just, you know, told us about would have ruined the whole day and possibly the next day.
Absolutely.
You know, but these kinds of things, as we're starting to maybe expand in our awareness and realize that, oh, dear, we're all connected. And, ooh, that might be a part of me. Icky, ick, poo, poo, gag, barf, spew. But I love you, too.
Oh, I was loving
on that. Oh, I bet you would have been loving something up on that one. Yeah.
I was. And I think I was upset. About what I had heard at the hospital.
Of course.
And I wasn't in touch with that. So the minute somebody tipped me over, I just sort of think that somewhere in my mind, I felt like that. I felt like all work and no play.
Yeah, you were.
Makes Katrina psycho.
Well, we just revert to jungle behavior.
Yeah. Yeah.
King of the jungle, Maui.
I mean,
chest beaters.
It's just so funny. It's so funny. How could we not take all of this as funny? And I found it funny
is.
Pretty quick.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's the mark of showing you that this practice does work. It really does.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. It's cultivation, you know, it's really about the cultivation of it and not looking at everything you do in life as a scorecard to where you are spiritually. Like when you give up that scorecard, you stop counting and you stop trying to get somewhere, and then the entertainment begins.
Oh, God, yes. Amen. And the entertainment is what is the whole point for me. I mean, I really can't see any other reason to be here except for that. I mean, obviously, I mean, that's a flippant thing to say, but it just, it changes everything. It's perception.
It is perception. And speaking of perception, I had an interesting idea, and I just kind of went with it. I like you, am very curious about perceptions of people on large topics and small topics, things like even in neuroscience, the understanding that we're all seeing a shade of blue, maybe not the same shade. And, you know, going from that direction to how people perceive conversations, how people perceive topics, how people perceive themselves.
And others.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly how I feel. So I did, I put it out to people to get their perception on how they would perceive a giant topic, which is, I know, forgive me that it's such a giant topic. What is God?
Yeah, that's minor.
It's kind of minor. Yeah, so I think a whole other podcast could be taken on what is God, but just for the sake of seeing how many different people perceive things in totally different ways, like I was just talking about the color blue. God is many things to many different people. All age groups, 20-year-olds, 50-year-olds. So here's a couple of them. A mom that is 50, I'm just telling you this information because maybe it helps somebody in some way to understand. Born in Wisconsin, her definition of what is God is clean sheets. I mean, but clean sheets could be. I mean, they could be that feeling of what is God? Comfort.
Uh-huh.
Feeling at home. Mm-hmm. So that's a perception. If we just look at it from a linear perspective, they would say clean sheets. Like, really? Mm-hmm. But I thought this was actually a pretty cool answer. Because it depends on who's looking at it. And
absolutely.
Perceptions help us so much through a spiritual practice and through trying to stand as the witness of our mind. So this gentleman named Leroy, I don't have any more information on him. He says mm-hmm. God is dog backwards.
What a comedian.
Right. A guy in Tennessee from a Christian background. Our hope, our help, our savior, God bless. A female in her 30s in California says that God is a word some humans use in an attempt to describe the power that is the unknown source of all creation. A gentleman around 30, he's a comedian and a musician. He put this in quotes, by the way. And he's set a tone that he is on stage when he says this. What isn't God is the real question, yo. And he drops the mic.
Gangsta.
Gangsta. Yeah. A friend of mine, a guy named Brian, early 40s, New Hampshire, he says, an illusion. Ian, the gentleman who does the music for Zooming in the Lens podcast, early 50s, British, doesn't really practice a spiritual practice per se, says everything and nothing, which I really like.
Yeah. Yay, Ian. I like that one too.
Yeah. My niece, Lexi, she is on the big island of Hawaii right now doing this work for hire. Have you ever heard of work for hire?
Sort of, but I don't really know what it is. Tell me what it is again, because
it's really cool. It's a website that you can go on. And if you want to travel, but you don't have a lot of money, but you want to see places, there are people that are looking for help, whether it's in their store, on a farm, all sorts of things.
Oh,
and
yeah.
You go and they house you and they feed you and you do a certain amount of hours of work and you're learning at the same time. Plus you're getting to go and live in that country or that state. Well, Lexi's done this. So she's on the Big Island right now and soon to be learning some permaculture. And she's an interesting girl. So she writes, "What is God? In a nutshell, I believe God is our universal consciousness. All of us, every emotion we feel, our entire universe," big capital letters, she writes, "love. God is everything we can perceive and everything we can't. We are all part of a bigger picture."
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And, you know what? I am so wrong. You know whose quote that was?
Oh.
That was her boyfriend's quote. Taylor.
Well, Taylor rocks too.
Wow, Taylor, good man. Yes, and he ends it with saying mahalo.
Mahalo.
Yeah, mahalo. Lexi says, "I think God is a concept more than a who. I think there exists gods, plural, internally and perhaps externally. I think of the concept of God as being more of indivisible power. Fate, the universe, whatever you may call it, but I believe it is what makes us all the same and what helps us to reach our full potential as humans here in this incarnation." Can you tell she's my niece? "I think God is us. I think God is that light inside of us. That when we honor our dharma and tap into our true selves, our intuition, God is the power inside of us to be who we really are." Nice job, Lexi. That is great. Somebody didn't want to answer the question, but sent in Steve Buscemi's post, I guess on Twitter, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
"What is God?" You know Steve Buscemi,
yeah,
right?
The actor. Yeah.
"What is God?" Well, you know, when you want something really bad and you close your eyes and wish for it, God's the guy that ignores you. Thank you, Buscemi. Yeah.
And note that God seems to be a guy in all of pretty, if it's not genderless, it's a guy.
Exactly.
Interesting, huh?
This is all perception. All these people's different perceptions on such a large topic like God. Ask them the color blue. Ask them what success is. Ask them how they define themselves. You ask one person, and one person might say completely something different about your looks. And then you look in the mirror and say, God, I wish I could see myself through the eyes of them. That's the purpose of having a guru. One purpose is to see yourself through their eyes. Deities, mythology. Sometimes we can't believe in ourselves enough, so we can see ourselves through the ones that are bestowing unconditional love onto us. Anyway, we have a guest.
Yay!
His name is Tommy Stewart.
Yay, and, Tommy.
Yeah. And he is, Sass and I both know him. He is a drummer that I have toured with for a long time. And I wanted to have him on today because he said something to me on the road about 14 years ago when we were in catering. His band at the time was Godsmack and mine was Lux. And we were somewhere, and I remember being at the catering area, and we had some sort of deep conversation at the moment, and he bestowed this theory onto me, or he just said it. I don't even think it was a theory, and I don't really know where it came from, but it was really powerful at the time. Uh-huh. So, you know, plus he's got a really interesting mind as to how we appear and show up in ourselves as musicians as well. So anyway, and Tommy also brought Sass and I back together after a couple of years of, I mean, we've always been together, but we sort of, life gets a hold of
us. No, he reconnected us because, I mean, if it wasn't for Tommy and I were playing in a band as well. We were, you know, right. In Sun. And Brian said to me, Brian, who plays drums and guitar, so we needed a drummer because he wanted to play guitar. Right. Said, I know this really great guy. His name is Tommy Stewart. He's amazing. Woo-hoo, we got to get him. I was like, if you think he's good, he must be pretty dang good. So anyways, in comes Tommy. And well, actually, it was before I even met Tommy. Brian said to me, you know, this Tommy Stewart guy says, you know, his girlfriend. And I'm like, who, really? And he goes, yeah, her name is Katrina. I have no idea who Katrina is because when I knew Katrina, she was Kat.
Right? I still am.
No, but you know what I mean? Like, I didn't even think of it for 2 seconds. It didn't even enter my mind. If he'd said Kat or even Kat Chester, you know, that. Anyway, so it was like, I had no idea who he was talking about. And then he goes, yeah, she was in New York with you. I love Janice. I was like, what? Yeah. Oh my God. What are the, it's like a needle in a haystack. Yeah. Tell me about it. So Tommy, cool. Thank you, Tommy.
Hey, Tommy.
Oh, you're most welcome, ladies. I am to please.
So what was it that you said?
I think I said, don't eat the fish.
No. Oh, dear God.
No.
Well, that was many, many years ago now, but I was touring with the band Fuel, and Carl, the guitar player and songwriter, and I were having a conversation, and he dropped this little gem on me. He said, being on the road is the perception of forward motion. And I just thought that was incredible. It really turned everything on its head for me because he was absolutely right. When you're out there, you feel like you're doing something or you're going somewhere, but you're really not. And then when you get home and your family and friends back there, they've kind of done things, moved on with their own lives in a certain way. And you're kind of stuck in that place you were 2 months before you left in the first place. It's kind of wild. But the more I think about it, maybe, you know, I didn't have, you know, kids and things like that to attend to back at home, and maybe that would be something that would keep you more on top of it and keep you more connected with that world back there. I don't know.
See, that's interesting, Tommy, because in my case, I did have a family and a kid and a partner and everything back home. I think it's actually more the individual and how they function in the world, because the type of personality that I have, I'm always all about whatever is going on in my immediate environment more than what's going on at a distance. And I sort of had to do that, especially in the early days when my daughter was really young. I had to do that because I would have probably gone nuts with guilt, the feeling of guilt of like abandoning my child and all that kind of crap. Even though, you know, if I wasn't doing what I did for a living, I wouldn't be making a living and she wouldn't be eating, type of thing. So it's, I think I must have trained myself that way, but it's always a case of the immediate present for me, like what is going on around me right now. Because I think perhaps the fact that I'm utterly self-absorbed doesn't you know, hurt.
Well, and you're right. I think it's easy to being out there and being in that bubble, it makes it easy to be self-absorbed because there's not much else really taking you out of that.
But you know, that is my tendency though, truly, and I think that's part of being an artist for me. I have to be completely absorbed in myself. Because here's the thing. Everything to me is relative to me. I think everybody's living in their own world. The fact that any of our worlds intersect in any way, shape, or form is astonishing to me, that we have some sort of what appears to be a consensual reality. You know, it's like, or it, when that we're all in together. I think that every single one, in fact, that's basically what we've been talking about, I suppose, all along, is that every single one of us is, our perception of the world is not necessarily at all what the person next to you sees, that's or right. the person beyond that. You right. know, it's, and there's no way, we're just going on faith here. There's no way for us to figure out whether or not they are saying or feeling or thinking the same thing. I can say to you, I know exactly what you mean, or I know exactly how you feel. No, I bloody well don't. I don't have a clue how you feel or what you're thinking, ever. So we're always in our own reality, in our own space, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be nice if we all just were accountable for our own perceptions. Because
But we are.
Well, we are, but we aren't, because many times we're saying things and reacting on things, and they're not really our perceptions, not our perceptions.
They're our programs.
They're our programming, sure. They're our roles and the things that we've accumulated through life. So what I mean mm-hmm. by it would be nice if we were all responsible for it is more, that's what I think practice and even psychotherapy to some extent is about, to show up in even the programming, to have awareness, mm-hmm. to add awareness to it. Like a good example, at least for me, is when I'm asleep, I'll report that I really don't like this and I really love that. And I never would turn around and actually ask myself the question. I would just report it. So, like an example, I don't like mayonnaise. I don't know if you do, Seth.
I don't either.
Okay.
No, I can't stand it.
Right. So I've never liked mayonnaise. And I've never liked mayonnaise. And my mom would make tuna fish with Miracle Whip.
Oh, God.
Now, I don't think I had a problem with Miracle Whip. I don't remember. But to me, Miracle Whip wasn't mayonnaise. But to a lot of the world, Miracle Whip is mayonnaise. Yeah. So I would just report every time I ate somewhere where there could possibly be condiments involved. I would just...
Hey, this is America. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere, right. I would just say, ugh, I hate mayonnaise. Ugh, I hate mayonnaise. Ugh, I hate mayonnaise. But then I stopped to think, when is the last time I've actually tried mayonnaise? Like, I don't even know if that's my original thought. And this is...
It's not. It's a program.
It could be, right? So...
It is. It's a total program. It might be one that you put in there earlier.
Sure,
it could be. It's just that now it's a box that you live in, on one of our billions of boxes.
Right.
But you know what you said? You said something about taking responsibility.
Yeah.
For your perceptions. Now that right there is that makes a massive difference. Yes, taking responsibility for your perceptions, taking responsibility for yourself, period, I think would make a massive shift in our world. We are programmed from the beginning to blame everything that happens to us on outside, something that seems external to us. You know what I mean? Like the government, your boyfriend, your girlfriend, your parents, they treated you like crap when you were a kid.
And they might have, though.
The weather.
Might have.
Yes, but they're not here now.
Well, and if why not? We're constantly looking outside ourselves for things to make ourselves feel better. So why wouldn't we find the bad in the outside world, too?
Uh-huh, absolutely. But it is a question of saying, you know what, I am going to take responsibility for this. I'm going to take responsibility for my likes and dislikes. I'm going to take responsibility for my taking up this space and for my reactions and responses to other people and to my perceived slights or insults or injuries or whatever. You know what I mean?
Well, it's just like asking the question, you know?
That cuts you off in traffic. It's like, my perception of that a-hole. Right. Is that he's an a-hole. Or, but you know what I mean? Like, maybe he's in a rush. Maybe he has diarrhea. Who knows?
Right.
I don't know.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Maybe he's...
Well, either one of those things would be in a rush, wouldn't they?
But we all are.
If you have diarrhea behind the wheel, it's a rush. You need to take care of that. But...
Yeah, but I wouldn't have turned into Jack Nicholson.
Well,
if it was just that, I wouldn't even have the ability to turn into Jack Nicholson.
But, and maybe you've talked about this before, but now it's to the point where every little slight that happens to us is life or death, which really controls the reaction to it and why it's so intense and fierce. And it's not necessary, because not everything is going to be life or death, or where you have to get in that fight or flight mode and escape the saber-toothed tiger. It's not really like that.
Well, what's a personal example for you of that?
My practice has been in traffic on the road, and that's where I'm, you know, I'm taking small steps, and those are the steps that seem to work for me. And I get less and less and less upset by traffic and other drivers on the road. But there's been many examples when I forgot about that and reacted in this ridiculously fierce way. Because every time I hear a car horn, I don't care where it's coming from or who it's aimed at, I always assume it's for me, and they are really fucking pissed. That's what a car horn sounds like to me. So going back to what you guys are talking about what is God, I'll tell you what God isn't, is a car horn.
Or at least not that sound. Was it you and I that were discussing there should be new car horn sounds? Like,
yes.
We've been dealing with these same car horn sounds for a long time. Like, what if there was, like, sweeter sounds for a car horn?
Then it would.
Well, there's no inflection, right?
So, no, it would be like, excuse me.
Yeah, that should sound different than, get the out of my way. You know, the two should sound different, so you know. Otherwise... This is what I'm talking about. I'm sitting there and I'm...
Oh, so you're saying have a couple of different choices.
Yes,
in car horns.
Because that way you would know right away if you heard that sweet kind of little, that just means, excuse me, do you mind if I get over?
Yeah.
As opposed to the...
This is what we talk about. This is the depth of me and Tommy's relationship right now.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know, shin deep.
Talus bone deep.
I can't stop laughing. I'm just laughing and laughing. That was funny, you guys. That was pretty funny.
We're gonna take this act on the road and live in our own bubble.
I thought we already did that.
Well, together though.
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Not in this lineup.
And then we won't have to worry about being in contact with anybody else back home.
Right.
Home
right.
will be because we'll,
you'll all be out there.
Right.
I did something that I could at least offer up of, I wrote down in a way to sort of be responsible for myself. Not that I don't think about whether it's going to change or not. I don't think about the result of it. I just, and I'm not doing it from this really hardcore, therapeutic place where it's all from my mind and, trying to criticize myself. I just do it lightly and softly, but I just made a list of all the things that I like or love and all the things that I don't like. And then I tackled the things not in a way of trying to change it, but in just noticing how often I felt the need to report it.
And by report it, you mean say it to another or
to myself
to yourself?
Or to another? Okay. Sure. Or you could keep like a journal of it, of just like, I don't think I even had any idea how opinionated I was or am, whatever.
She's not opinionated.
Let's stay in the present.
I mean, when you write down that list, you just get an awareness. And you know what? If anybody says, oh, who cares about that? I like what I like and I don't like what I don't like, then the conversation of attachment has to come up. Because when you really aren't attached, you have no problem making the list. And you know what? If nothing else, you find out or you remember what things you like and what things you don't like. And there's blind likes, too.
blind likes. I call them blind likes, but an example of that is that you don't get to converse about it. It's not like, oh, I hate mayonnaise or I hate fish or I love salted caramel ice cream. There are things that kind of happen and we just blow them off. So this is another option too. But a good example I have is, you know, when you're in conversation with somebody, well, you think you're in conversation with somebody, but what you're actually doing is talking nonstop. Yeah. Sass is shaking her head.
I'm saying yes.
Yeah, she's saying yes.
Exactly. You're just waiting for the other person to stop so you can talk.
So you have these conversations like with people and you can walk away and like say you're with somebody and you're driving back from having this conversation. And that person hasn't said a word, but you just literally bit their ear off with all your schmutz and drama and likes and dislikes and opinions and all this stuff. And they barely said a word and you're in the car driving back and you turn to your friend or your partner and you say, wow, I really, really like that person.
Because why is that? Because they didn't say a word and let you just spill?
Well, I speak about it much more from a place of we all want to be heard. We all want to be mm-hmm. seen. The problem is we're not hearing or seeing ourselves. So mm-hmm. when we get to hear ourselves, we almost get this biochemical surge of like dopamine.
Yeah.
That feel good, you know,
chemical.
Yeah. What is the chemical again?
Serotonin, dopamine.
No.
I don't know.
No. I always remember the stress hormone, but I have such a hard time remembering the good cortisol. One. Yeah. No, it's cortisol.
Isn't that funny?
Right. I know. And I can't remember. Oxytocin. Thank you. It just came to my brain.
It's the love gene mm-hmm. or the love
cuddle.
Chemical.
The cuddle hormone.
Chemical.
So you get that nice jolt and because they're in your eye view, this person, while you're getting your own oxytocin jolt, your next time you see them, you're just going to naturally feel good. We're not even aware of this stuff. This is stuff that's just biologically happening to us. And so I started to test it out. And I went to this one concert. I can only tell you this story briefly, but I ended up backstage. And I'm backstage. I didn't want to go backstage, but there I was backstage and I see somebody or they see me and I see them making a beeline right for me. And I decided, all right, I'm going to test this out now. And it's an old colleague I used to tour with. Very nice guy. And I say, hi. And he says, how are you? What are you up to? And I'm like, I'm going to say, nothing much. What are you up to? 15 minutes later, I think he came up for air about 15 minutes later, after I had literally found out what he had for breakfast 10 years ago.
Those details are important.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember that night.
Right. And I didn't say anything. And I was convinced that, oh, he's going to bring it back around and try to find out, you know, something about me. But he didn't. And I was happy about that in the end. And I was, you know, interested in what he was talking about. But for my experiment into myself, we parted ways. Mm-hmm. And I knew that in that moment, I actually didn't feel the oxytocin or the dopamine, what I just felt was this equanimity. I wasn't judging him and I wasn't thinking I was better and he was worse. I just was able to get away not having another strong opinion of like or dislike, you know, obviously because of the practice or the awareness that but I just paused enough to try it. And in the end, that was years ago, you find that in conversations with people, you could see that present in them and it it just helps you sort of reorganize yourself because you're able to pause in that moment. And then what happens after time is that you really feel with capital L what it's like to really listen and not just wait till it's your turn to talk. And that came out of that for me, that exercise I was just telling you about. It came out of that. It wasn't any longer just hearing. And it all happened with a pause. And it all happened with the likes and the dislikes list. And you know, that's just your own inner switch, shift of perception practice. You know, that like everybody could do that.
It's a form of love, you know, when you hold the space for someone else to find themselves or to talk, you know, about themselves. We all ignore ourselves to a large degree, like really what's inside, you know, what they call the what is known as the inner child is rarely listened to in any of our cases. You know, we're not taught to do that. That's not our cultural practice. It's not a practice in our culture to listen to ourselves deeply, which, you know, the part of really what we all are, in my opinion, of course, is, you know, 5-year-old children in pain, basically.
Right.
And rest of everything that we do comes from that place. Hence, you know, the fury and the anger and the rage and completely out of context in these circumstances where it really doesn't make any sense whatsoever. It actually, once you start to notice your behaviors, these types of behaviors, they can become somewhat amusing, you know, in retrospect. You look at them and you go, my God, what an idiot I am. But then again, there you are berating yourself again. Whereas it's just like, ah, come here, you silly goose. What are you doing? What are you doing? You know, you have to talk to yourself like you're a 5-year-old in pain. Would you talk to a 5-year-old in pain in the manner that we speak to ourselves most of the time? Would you do that? Nah.
No.
Well, unless...
But I might.
If he's a real brat.
Yeah, depends.
Nah, I know neither of you would do that. Not when they're in pain. Anyways.
Yeah, you're so right.
It's really about love. It's about love. It's about loving yourself and the reflection of yourself in the other.
Well,
because
and, you
really,
know, that's
it's
a big
only
thing.
Ever about yourself. That's, it's a huge thing.
It's a big
it's
thing
the
to say.
It's the biggest thing. It's the biggest thing.
There's a lot of people out there that might not feel self-love. And I don't even
all
know
of
if
us.
There's an ending to that. I think just saying if we could just all be aware of
yes.
the journey to self-love and
that is
not
the beginning
care
of love.
So much about whether you get it or not. Just that's when your practice starts, that whole don't know mind, you know, like staying in the beginner's mind and staying in that place of like not self-deprecation, but openness, awareness, the mm-hmm. ability to shift our perception at the drop of a, what is it?
A hat or a dime. Or a dime, apparently.
He and I have a private joke about that. I tend to mix up sayings, so.
Your analogies are so funny. I wish I could think of some absurd example right now, but I can't.
Well, for a while, you thought it was the drop of a dime, and then I proved to you that there is such a saying as at the drop of a dime.
According to Wikipedia, apparently certain parts of the country say drop of a dime, and where I'm from,
no,
it's
really?
A drop of a hat. Now, what about in Canada? Is it a drop of a hat or drop of a dime?
Hat.
See, that's what I thought, too.
Yeah. Well, switch your perception, young man.
I know. I mean, because everybody knows the world revolves around New York anyway, so.
You got that right, sucker.
Listen to this quote, because I am quote master.
General?
I would like a shirt that says quote master. There's much more in any given moment than we usually perceive, and that we ourselves are much more than we usually perceive. When you know that, part of you can stand outside the drama of your life.
Oh, that was Louis C.K., right? That said that?
No, that was Ram Dass.
Oh,
but
right.
Louis C.K. has quite a lot of great things to say, I have to say. He does.
He was a disciple of my most favorite, George Carlin.
Oh, come on, girl. That's my favorite.
Well, so we have to fight about
no,
it?
No, I just...
We can't both have
I was just having that epiphany of like, wow, if I ever wondered why you and I are such close friends, that would be enough of a reason right there.
That's the glue all these years right there.
Absolute genius.
Because he's helping us shift our perception. Why do we park on a driveway and drive on a parkway? I mean, that really got me as a kid.
Through a rather innocuous pun.
Right. And speaking of that, just the fact that we have names sometimes can be interesting because your name is fueled with all this belief about who you are and who you were when you were younger. And I was having this conversation yesterday with a student, and I said, isn't it wild how when we're kids, you know, that we, at least girls are, I don't know about you, but when I was in school, all the girls would change their names and give each other nicknames and take on a nickname. And I was thinking to myself, could you imagine doing that at 40 years old? Like just turning, Sass turning to me and saying, you know what? I don't want to be called Sass anymore. I want to be called
Aqua Sky.
Aqua Sky. Right. Now,
that was my name.
No, it wasn't.
You when I was 14. That was it. I can't believe you're saying this. This is too funny.
I was wondering why that came up so quickly.
Yeah.
That's because I was like, I remember doing that. Mine was Aqua Sky.
Yeah. And how could we not do that as adults? Well, I feel like I at least got somewhere, or at least my student did, because we're so in our heads, you know, and the older we get, I don't want to say we get more judgmental, because I happen to think kids are judgmental as well, if not more. But you know, as we get older and we're not finding those moments of being awake, you know, in that metaphorical sense of awake, we get really critical. And, you know, one good example is if when you hear somebody say that, what like I just did, and you say, ugh, I find it so phony or so like pseudo spiritual when somebody changes their name to Aqua Sky or whatever it is. Like,
oh yeah.
What I have to say to that is that means that you're caught. That is a little sign to show you that there is some attachment there, because if you truly don't have a problem with somebody changing your name or somebody calling you something different, then you'd be able to play more and not be so judgmental when somebody maybe comes back from India and has that name. And my sister Gail, funny, this is funny, I think I was having a conversation with her about this at some point. It was right before I was asked to write the course, Zooming in the Lens, for Ram Dass, speaking of name changes. My sister started calling me Linguini Das.
Yes.
And I just thought it was the funniest thing.
Servant of pasta?
Yes, because I am a servant of pasta. I mean, we're Italian, so she came up with Linguini Das.
So she's American. So what in that context, it's pasta is served.
Pasta is
Linguini Das. Pasta is served.
Yeah, why not? But, you know, I'm getting off track here and boring everybody. Yeah. But my point is if we have problems with things, we usually will end up making fun of people that change their names. But when we were younger, it was, I could say to my girlfriend, call me blah, blah, blah. And they would do it. And, oh, okay, you want to be called that? Sure, no problem.
Well, you also haven't had 30, 40, 50 years of Katrina-ness or Tommy-ness.
At that time, right.
Like you haven't had 40 years of having that name and having it cemented into who you actually think that you are because of that name.
True. And maybe we're craving, even at that age, to unzip the spacesuit through the name.
Maybe it could be instinctual because you're not cemented yet that you can play a little more.
You're finding yourself.
You're living more in a world of make believe, or you know, the the possibility to make believe. As we get older, for some reason, that type of behavior seems to go out the window because you have to start, you start thinking about bills and making a living and having a relationship and being a parent and, you know, all, you know, homeowner, this, that, all these very third dimensional world type responsibilities and being a grown up and all of these things, you lose that ability to invent worlds and to play out roles that you don't actually do in your regular everyday life, that you, you know, like, let's pretend we're in King Arthur's time and you can be Guinevere because I want to be Morgause.
Right.
You know, that kind of says like, I want to do that. Okay, yeah, but tomorrow I get to be Morgause. No, oh really? No, you don't, because I'm, you know, that kind of crap. But wish we, the closest we get to it is like when we're in all of our cases, I would say, is playing music. I mean, that's the closest we get to playing out, you know, a different role as a, like a make-believe-y type of role, because as soon as you get off the stage, that persona shifts into something more sort of down earth.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because otherwise, boy, whew, there'd be a little bit of argument coming from your friends and your family. Get off that goddamn stage right now, you drama queen, you.
Well, you'd have to sign up for the belief already that we're not even here to hear this. But naturally, it isn't the mere fact of being named that brings about the hoax of being a real person, quote unquote. It is all that goes with it. The child is tricked into the ego feeling by the attitudes, words, and actions of the society which surrounds him, his parents, relatives, teachers, and above all, his similarly hoodwinked peers. Other people teach us who we are. Mm-hmm. So that's Alan Watts. And yeah, so if you subscribe to that we're not even here belief system of everything is illusion, Maya, then...
I don't.
Right. So if you do, then you can look at the names of who we are as just constantly trying to get you out of what you could be and what your heart might be, because it's all just very cerebral names. They're cerebral ideas that your parents have. You get it. And then if you try to change and grow through life, what's the first thing you hear? Well, that's not like you at all. Or, wow, you've changed. Or, wow, you haven't changed at all. And it's your perception to all of that that is going to tell you where you're at in your journey.
In your programming.
Right. In being that playing out that part and that role. And there's nothing wrong with the role either. Like, don't blame the role. I'm not blaming Katrina as a role. I'm just self-inquiring into what that actually is so that I can try to process things from different places. And I still will stand by that if it's not that big of a deal, then just do it and see what happens. Let somebody else call you another name and see what that feels like. And if you feel phony or if it feels stupid or you feel childish or you feel this, I mean, yeah, it would be great if you could call me an asshole and it still wouldn't matter.
It's the intention that you're talking about, you know, but it, the thing is it has, it's your identity. It's, that's why we're so attached to our names. Although I personally don't, I'd be perfectly happy to have another name myself, because it contains the word ass. You realize that.
Okay, well, let's do it. Then you're Aqua Sky.
I don't like that either.
Oh, okay.
You're over Aqua Sky?
We're going to change it right now.
I'm a little over it. Yeah, but I have to like it. Anyways, here's the thing. It's all about your identity. You identify as an... Who are you? Well, I am Sass, and I am married, and I have a child.
Your identity is a perception.
It's an identity thing. It's a, exactly. And it's exactly the same. I'm saying names are simply a part of your identity. But it of an ego identity. It's just a way to identify yourself as separate from another.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even though, isn't that funny? And we all, half of us all have the same name anyway.
You know? Well, you know, perceptions just lead into everything. It's just a great thing to investigate. Remember, Sass, we had done that podcast about careers and knowing what you want to do. And I was thinking of it in terms of that and how limited our perception is. If you want to do, if you love golf, then you have to be a golf pro. Like, there's no room for you to maybe create golf clubs or be the person that cleans, you know, the golf balls or whatever. We just have these golden places that we want to try to get to with every idea for a career. But that the limited perceptions of what we can do are perpetuated by society's linear system of what success is. And in our world today, success is money and power and not so much about wisdom or the being of who we are. It's much more about what we are. And so if you try to shift that around.
Or what we have.
Well, yeah. And what we have is usually what people, if you're caught in that place.
That's what I mean.
You are. Yeah.
Well, because because who you are really in yourself can't buy that car that you're being advertised to about, or can't buy this thing or get that or go on this trip.
That's right.
The self can't get all those things. Only money can. But
the self doesn't want them.
Right. Exactly. But the ego does.
Yes. Yes.
Definitely.
So it's the identity, the ego identity that wants those things. Why does it want those things? So it looks good. It feels good. It feels, you know, comfortable. It's a lot to do with comfort, but mainly it's to do with what we perceive as freedom. The freedom to be able to do whatever the hell we want, whenever the hell we want to do it. Mm. You know what I mean? That's the money thing. But the irony is that the most important things to us are things you can't buy. I know, don't laugh. It's such a cliche. I understand. But it's what's more important than love, really, in any shape or form? And how do you buy love? Don't give me the prostitute business. I'm talking about real love, 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 love. Yeah. You know?
Yeah.
It's anything that you really, really desire, you can't buy.
Yeah.
It's odd, right? Food and all that stuff is that's a different situation. I'm not really talking about that. But the most important things to humans is not something that you can buy, are things that you cannot buy. Hence, can't buy me love. Everybody tell me so. It's the Beatles.
Sass. Sass. Well, we're getting to a close here, but I just want to say... Yeah.
That was interesting.
It might feel like, well, me just investigating myself or having self-inquiry, how's that going to affect anybody else? And how's that going to affect any part of the world? But there's a philosopher, a Russian philosopher named Gurdjieff, and he wrote a really great quote that I've actually found again and have been driving around with it. So I'll lay it on you. If enough individuals could develop themselves, even partially, into genuine natural beings, each such individual would then be able to convince and win over as many as 100 others who would each in his turn be able to influence another 100 and so on and so on.
Yeah.
So the change you want to see in the world, that whole thing.
Be the change.
That's right. And
Gandhi.
He created something called The Work, Gurdjieff, and The Fourth Way. Mm-hmm. Really interesting if you want to check out.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling the people, Sass.
I realized that. That's why I stopped talking right in the middle of what I was saying.
Sass.
Sorry.
So Zooming in the Lens course is going great.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's going really great. So if you're interested in doing something that's sort of down to earth and practical application wise on self-inquiry and things like that, just go to functionalyogaonline.com. There's all sorts of links on there, Facebook links and ways to find out about it? Obviously, you found out about the podcast, so I imagine that it's getting out there, and we're really happy about that. And we do thank everybody for putting up with our rants. And what else you got to say, Tommy, before we close? Because thank you for coming on.
No, I enjoyed spending time with my two favorite rock chicks. Well, you and I have many conversations, and SAS too. When we're all together, we have great discussions, and it's fun to hang out with you guys and talk about this stuff.
Well, maybe you'll come back then.
If you'll have me, my perception is that you'll have me back because I am so entertaining.
You are. You are very.
And also, he is, and he's got a. It's fascinating to have someone of the other gender involved in these conversations because there is a subtle difference in our approach, you know, not necessarily subtle, but there's definitely a difference, and it's really, really great to have you there, Tommy. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I did too. Mm. I did too. And so all I'll say,
that's it for this
is
one.
That's all she has to say. I can't talk for some reason. I'm so sorry.
That's all, folks.
So, check out your perceptions. That's what I have to say. Check out your perceptions. Try to make that list. Do something funky and different.
Just become aware of how you're seeing things. Like, wow. That's the thing. Like, wow. It's actually kind of fascinating once you start doing it. And you will, I promise you that you will make yourself laugh.
Yes. Hopefully, if you're doing it right.
Oh, you will. Because you'll just be like, wow, did I really just think that?
Yeah, I it's amazing how many things you don't like and how many things you're not good at.
Shut up, Katrina.
And I think
I'm saying that because I say a lot of things to Sass and she just says, well, you know what? That's the one thing I'm not good at. But if I added them all up, it's probably up to about 37 or so.
Yeah, but you see, if you're not good at it, then no one expects anything from you. You understand? There's a method to the madness here.
Yes, of course. It's obvious. Yes, but you can't say that to me and expect me not to know that. I know that.
And going back to your point, I think Robin Williams said it. He said, and if you can't laugh at yourself, just listen to me laughing at you.
I love it.
That's a great place to end. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
That's the key point, that there is the cynical attitude that exists within us, that one wonders, should I give in to my cynical attitude? Or maybe I should have given in. Maybe I should have gone through the whole way. And at this point, it is absolutely necessary to understand basic spirituality. To go along with cynical attitude, questioning everything, not necessarily intellectual, logical, metaphysical way, but experientially, trying to go along with that particular approach is extremely important. So that is the first step, as well as the first step for you to be a student here to how to sharpen your intellect.
Music and editing. Special thank you to Ian Hatton. If you'd like more information on Ian, go to mixforpix.com.